Inhaling the crisp November air, I felt its coolness at the nostrils. Exhaling, I saw the breath float like a white cloud, spread out and disappear. There's nowhere to go, there is nothing to do, there is no one to be. Frost glittered as I walked on the gravel driveway, my boots crunching with each step. Trust the present moment and let it be good enough. Inside the meditation hall, an hour of gentle, steady mindfulness flowed by without the usual mental chatter or fantasy. See the positive mind, mental factors unfolding without a doer. Be with ordinary. Then, 19 days into a 6-week silent meditation retreat, I woke up to a well of grief, with no clear cause or focus. I stayed with the feelings of heaviness, the fleeting images of my late father, my late sister, our disabled daughter, the sound of my sobbing. A few hours later, I saw a folded blue paper on the bulletin board labeled U.S. Presidential Election Results. I lifted the flap and read three words: winner, Donald Trump. Now what? In these moments when life throws us a curveball, where do we turn? What spiritual, intellectual, and ethical resources are available to guide us through uncertain and challenging terrain? How do we live out our deepest values without burning out? Unitarian Universalism has its 7 principles to guide our engagement with the world. Our congregations covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations, like our meeting last week, and in society at large, like our election last November. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. These principles were given their current form in the mid-1980s, when that last part about the interdependent web was added. Even before they were articulated, Unitarians and Universalists were living them out in the world. In 1790, the Universalist Convention in Philadelphia adopted an anti-slavery resolution by Benjamin Rush, who also signed the Declaration of Independence. As Mark Harris writes in Unitarian Universalist Origins, Our Historic Faith, quote, "The Universalists believed in a God who embraced everyone, and this eventually became central to their belief that lasting truth is found in all religions, that dignity and worth are innate to all people, regardless of sex, color, race, or class. Growing out of this inclusive theology was a lasting impetus in both denominations to create a more just society. Both Unitarians and Universalists became active participants in many social justice movements in the 19th and 20th centuries." Kimberly French, in a 2003 article in UU World magazine on modern-day slavery, said, "We rightly claim many 19th century abolitionists, Samuel J. May, Thomas Wentworth Higginson, Julia Ward Howe, Theodore Parker, and Sylvanus Cobb Jr., among others." Mark Harris adds to the list. Other reformers included Universalists such as Charles Spear, who called for prison reform, and Clara Barton, who went from Civil War angel of the battlefield to become the founder of the Red Cross. Unitarians such as Dorothea Dix fought to break the chains of people incarcerated in mental hospitals, and Samuel Gridley Howe started schools for the blind. For the last 2 centuries, Unitarians and Universalists have been at the forefront of movements working to free people from whatever bonds may oppress them. This congregation has its own heritage of activism. Reverend Dr. Roger Jones just graduated from his doctoral program at Pacific School of Religion, and I got a pre-publication copy of his dissertation. It's fantastic. I'm sure it'll be available, and I recommend it. So I'll be quoting it quite a bit here. It's titled, From a Culture of Conflict to a Renewal of Covenant. And he writes this, the giving of one's services, resources, and presence to ease or prevent the suffering of others is a value and a legacy of this congregation's identity as first a liberal Christian church, later humanist, and now a theologically diverse congregation. Roger reviewed newsletters of our Women's Alliance from 1946 to 1953 and found that every issue, quote, bears an article about programs and activities of the church's chapter of the Fellowship for Social Justice, a larger Unitarian denominational body, unquote. Reverend Ford Lewis was our minister throughout the 60s. He marched in Selma, Alabama in 1965 with support from the board and congregation. With Ford's support, Phyllis Gardner hosted organizing meetings at UUSS to found a Sacramento chapter of Planned Parenthood. Our activism continues to this day. Our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, reminds us that we are all in this together. While the injustices in our country and world may at times seem overwhelming, we can take strength from the inclusive and sometimes surprising coalitions that are forming to defend water, indigenous rights, disappearing species, oppressed minorities, universal health insurance, and scientific facts, among many others. As you may have heard in last week's service honoring our volunteers, UUSS has 13 racial equity and social justice initiatives representing a wide diversity of collaborative efforts. Our justice theme for the year, Confronting Economic Inequality, has been a multi-pronged exploration of this complex issue, using everything from movie nights to joining an interfaith effort to build a house with Habitat for Humanity. And you'll notice in your order of service an announcement for a wonderful interfaith event next week after the service, so check that out, Native Voices and Earth Justice. In all of this worthy activity, where have we turned for spiritual support? Have we stayed connected to our highest values? What prevents us from burning out? In Mary's reading, David Loy reminded us that the paths of personal and social transformation are not separate from each other. While I have found the UU principles in this community helpful in navigating the outside world, I have found myself looking for spiritual practices to support the inner life. The deepest support has been provided by the practice of insight meditation, also known as Vipassana. I was introduced to this practice in 2003 by that gentleman right over there, our former minister, Reverend Doug Kraft, after the death of my father. This form of meditation is based on the teachings of the historical Buddha over 2,500 years ago. In our beginning meditation courses at Sacramento Insight Meditation, we define insight meditation as non-judgmental, present moment awareness. Others have defined it as paying attention in a particular way on purpose, and as remembering to recognize the present moment's experience. By practicing this open, dynamic awareness in formal daily sittings, on longer retreats, and in daily life, we cultivate a mind that sees the world just as it is and is less reactive to the worldly winds of gain and loss, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and being ignored. We find balance in the relief from our usual habits of chasing after what we want and avoiding what we don't want. We learn to recognize the deep-seated characteristics of all existence, constant flux of change through all things, from the fleeting thoughts coming in and out of our minds to the hopeful possibility of change in our unhelpful habit patterns. from subatomic particles to the gradual erosion of a great mountain, from the gradual process of the body's aging to the certain yet mysterious transition at death. We learn not to take everything so personally, knowing that everything is a result of causes and conditions and is ultimately out of our control. We learn to see the way things are and not turn away. And we learn that the arrival of adversity or discontent in our lives is not a signal that something has gone wrong, but rather that this is how things are and have come to be for now. Instead of "why me?", we may find it more appropriate to respond with "it's about time." The ultimate goal of the practice of meditation is the development of wisdom, leading to freedom from suffering, dissatisfaction, and discontent. Or as Scott said, struggles and challenges. On the path to personal and social transformation, wisdom is balanced by the qualities of the heart: kindness, joy, compassion, gratitude, forgiveness, acceptance, equanimity. Through both formal cultivation of these qualities and informal practice in daily life, we incline the mind-heart away from suffering and toward peace. The ultimate goal of these practices is to make them the default setting of the mind and heart. In times of stress, rather than reacting from old habits of selfishness, fear, or anger, we respond appropriately. For example, when spontaneous protests began in Tibet in 2008, the Chinese authorities reacted with brutal repression. The Dalai Lama said, "I deliberately tried to keep compassion and a sense of concern for the Chinese hardliners. I tried to take their anger, their fear into myself and give them my love, my forgiveness." One other essential training on the path is ethical living. Buddhism provides very useful training precepts to help us gauge the results of our actions. The five basic precepts are to refrain from harming sentient beings, to refrain from taking what is not given, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from lying — there's a concept — and to refrain from intoxicants that lead to heedlessness. These can be stated positively to make clear that the precepts are offered for training, not as absolute prohibitions like the Ten Commandments, also offering us an opportunity to continually deepen them throughout our lives. So we strive to protect life, to be generous with our resources, to act skillfully and harmlessly in our relationships, to communicate truthfully, and to develop and guard a clear, balanced, and calm mind. In practice, we set our intention to follow the precepts, and inevitably we will fall short in some area, hopefully becoming more and more subtle as our practice matures. When this happens, rather than judge ourselves, we observe how it feels when we act unskillfully. We resolve to do better. When our actions align with our intentions, we see how that feels. In this way, we positively reinforce skillful behavior and move away from harmful behavior. The perspective offered by the precepts also opens us up to the value of community. As the Buddha said, when a society comes together and makes decisions in harmony, when it respects its most noble traditions, cares for its most vulnerable members, treats its forests and lands with respect, then it will prosper and not decline. Each of these areas of Buddhist practice supports action in the world. Some folks less familiar with Buddhism may buy into the stereotype of living alone in a cave as the ideal Buddhist lifestyle. This is not the case at all. In fact, Tenzin Palmo, who actually lived in a cave for 12 years, was one of the first Westerners to be fully ordained as a Buddhist nun. As soon as she emerged from the cave, she began educating, advocating, and fundraising to promote equal rights and opportunities for female monastics. The historical Buddha faced the question of what to do after his enlightenment and ultimately chose to share his knowledge, wisdom, and compassion by deeply engaging with the society of his time. In our time, Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh coined the term engaged Buddhism to describe the efforts he and his community made to address the suffering caused by the American war in their country. He counsels us to recognize our place in the interdependent web of all existence, or as he calls it, interbeing. We are here to awaken from our illusion of separateness. We are imprisoned in our small selves, thinking only of having some comfortable conditions for this small self, while we destroy our larger self. If we want to change the situation, we must begin by being our true selves. If to be our true selves means we have to be the forest, the river, the ozone layer, unquote. The Buddhist Peace Fellowship was formed in 1978. It is a non-sectarian international network of nonviolent social activists now headquartered in Oakland. Katie Lonk, their co-director, who was born here in Sacramento, articulates her vision like this: "The next American dream to which I aspire is not a dream at all, but an awakening, a realization and dissolution of America itself, beyond borders as we know them, beyond the dualism and domination of the nation state, toward a reverence for life and generous caretaking of the global commons, toward everyone having enough food, water, shelter, medicine, toward healing, compassion, and trust in our fellow beings, toward liberty and justice for all. And even if this awakening never comes to pass, aren't we here to try?" Bhikkhu Bodhi, an American monk who has translated many of the Buddha's discourses, started Buddhist Global Relief in 2008 and has been a steady voice advocating deeper involvement of Buddhists in social issues. Action requires more than personal decisions to consume less and be more mindful about one's use of energy, he writes. If we are going to stem climate change, what is needed is a fierce compassion, ready to stand up to lies and expose the truth. What is needed is courageous action that can awaken minds and change hearts, that can startle people out of their complacency. Locally, Susan Orr, Diane Wild, and I taught classes about the usefulness of the Buddhist precepts in addressing climate change. These classes led to the formation of the Sacramento Climate Sangha, which meets monthly every fourth Tuesday. While we exchange some information, the primary purpose is to connect our practice and mutual support to the challenges of working on climate change on the individual and collective levels. In November of 2015, we organized an interfaith climate march at the Capitol to highlight the Paris climate talks. Diane Wild, who's a colleague at Sacramento Insight Meditation, founded the Buddhist Pathways Prison Project in 1997. Their volunteers currently bring Buddhist services to 13 prisons and 2 jails in California. So we circle around to that question: now what? As I read the 3 words on the folded blue paper on the bulletin board, I did not have any immediate reaction other than disbelief. When I entered the meditation hall and closed my eyes, 2 more words appeared in my mind like a neon sign: Supreme Court. I knew when I left the retreat there would be much for me to do. I also felt a groundedness and a confidence that this period of silent practice in community would serve me well in that work. Again from Roger's dissertation, quote, "We start our work in the world by bowing in humility to the beauty, randomness, and mystery of life, and by bowing to one another in trust and love. Our theological inheritance has not vanished, but we may have left it lying around somewhere while hard at work trying to get it right." To that theological inheritance of Unitarian Universalism, I offer encouragement to add a spiritual practice that nurtures you and find a justice-loving community to practice with. Mushim Patricia Ikeda, poet and teacher at the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland, authored A Great Vow for Mindful Activists. "Aware of suffering and injustice, I," and you say your name, "am working to create a more just, peaceful, and sustainable world. I promise, for the benefit of all, to practice self-care, mindfulness, healing, and joy. I vow not to burn out. Perhaps a meditation practice would bring these qualities into your life, as it has for me. Perhaps a practice cultivating positive heart qualities like kindness, forgiveness, gratitude, and equanimity would provide further support. Perhaps living ethically as possible would bring ease and clarity. Perhaps other spiritual practices are already supporting you in your engagement with the world. Roger ends his dissertation with these words: "The covenant has held us together, the values have guided us, and the mission has called us forward." Recognizing our theological diversity and our part in the interdependent web, let us work together to extend the legacy of this congregation's identity, giving of our service, resources, and presence to ease or prevent the suffering of others. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.